Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Working in extreme weather, a major safety group demanding answers. UAW on the move. What a year for organizing. And today on the show, the latest from the American Legion and the North Coast Labor Federation. Welcome to the Thursday, December 16th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and the platform known as Stitcher. Jeff Stoffer is going to be our first guest today. He comes to us from the American Legion. He is the Media and Communications Division Director, longtime supporter and contributor to America's Workforce, legion.org. And the first thing he's going to talk about is the aftermath of last weekend's deadly tornado outbreak that destroyed the town of Mayfield, Kentucky, including American Legion Post 26. So, the Legion family all around the country collecting donations to help. They're also helping closer by. Post 82, they're in Campbellsville, Kentucky, donated $1,250 to the Department of Kentucky's relief fund aimed at helping those impacted by the tornado. The tornado stayed on the ground for at least 128 miles, while other tornadoes touched down in Illinois, Arkansas, Missouri, and Tennessee. And right now, the death toll stands at 74. That's just in Kentucky, six in Illinois, including two veterans who died in the collapse of an Amazon warehouse. And we've been hitting that pretty hard this week, and I've got more to talk about regarding that warehouse coming up. So Jeff is going to hit that. Also, we're going to get into the January edition. And on the cover is their featured story, Lucky to Be Alive. And this is the story of an Afghan interpreter. We talked about this a couple months back before Afghanistan fell to the Taliban. And this guy is just lucky. But there's more that have not gotten out of Afghanistan. And speaking of the Taliban, we have heard a couple of reports that this is a new and more gentle Taliban. Well, that's not the case. This is the same old Taliban. That's another story we're going to cover in the January edition. And one more here. This involves helping out World War II veterans. And there's a post on Legion.org coming from the national commander, who writes, "It is disheartening to know that there are still World War II vets who do not have access to VA benefits." I just can't believe this. And he says the American Legion is fighting to correct this lapse with legislation now pending in Congress. And there's a link on how you can contact your representatives in Congress on this. He points out that our World War II vets halted the spread of tyranny, secured our democracy for generations to come, and as of last month, fewer than 240,000 veterans remain and hundreds pass away every day. Of those still living, not all of them are getting the VA healthcare services that they earn through their service. Why is this happening? Well, we'll talk to Jeff about that, but that is so sad and wrong. The good news is, apparently, Congress is trying to rectify the situation. Later in the show, we're going to be checking in with Pat Gallagher on behalf of the North Coast Labor Federation and the steelworkers, and he's got a couple of things he's going to get into. Number one, redistricting. This is a topic we've addressed with Tim Berger, the Ohio AFL-CIO, and it's not just exclusive to the state of Ohio. It's happening all around the country because Republicans are in control of many of the state houses, and they're drawing the districts to favor that they keep getting reelected. Now, this case is currently before the Supreme Court of Ohio. And he's got some references, too, because a really good friend of labor, Marcy Kaptur, been in Congress since, I believe, 1982. And her district has been gerrymandered, and she might be out of a job as a result of what's going on, because Ohio is going to lose one of their representatives. Currently, we have 16. It's going to go down to 15. WTO, 20 years since the United States lined up with China, and we have seen close to 4 million jobs disappear, many of them steelworker jobs. We'll talk about that. And lastly, this is certainly good news, and this is courtesy of the Economic Policy Institute. They just did a new report documenting the correlation between higher levels of unionization and a range of economic, personal, and democratic well-being measures. In the same way, says the report, unions give workers a voice at work with a direct impact on wages and working conditions. Unions also give workers a voice in shaping their communities. Where workers have this power, states have more equitable economic structures, social structures, and democracies. Now listen to this. The 17 U.S. states with the highest union densities have state minimum wages that are, on average, 19% higher than the national average and 40% higher than those in low union density states. They also have medium annual income $6,000 higher than the national average and have higher than average unemployment insurance recipiency rates, meaning a higher share of those who are unemployed actually receiving unemployment insurance. How many times you've heard me say the union difference? You got a high density union state, better wages, better benefits, and that all means a better community. And this is all contained in the Economic Policy Institute report, epi.org, if you want to read the entire document there. Good publication, affiliated with labor for a long, long time. All right. Last couple days, we're talking about the tornadoes, specifically what happened to various companies down there. And now the national organization dealing with worker safety, NCOSH, has released a statement. This is the National Council for Occupational Safety and Health. Jessica Martinez is co-executive director, and she said, "We are grieving for all of those who lost their lives as a result of the extreme weather events in the Midwest. It's another reminder of urgent action required by all of us to address the impact of human-induced climate change. Employers, in particular, have a legal and moral responsibility to address known safety hazards. 8 workers are known dead so far at the Mayfield Consumer Products Factory in Mayfield, Kentucky. 6 workers are known dead so far at an Amazon warehouse in Illinois. Marcy Goldstein Gelb, also co-executive director of National COSH, said investigations into these workplace tragedies must include questions about why workers were on the job during extreme weather. What kind of warning systems were in place? What processes do Amazon and Mayfield have in place for emergency preparedness and response?" Well, in Illinois, an Amazon worker told Bloomberg News, "After these deaths, there is no way in hell I am relying on Amazon to keep me safe. If they institute the no cell phone policy, I'm resigning." Well, Amazon has been reintroducing a controversial corporate policy suspended during the pandemic, which prevents them from having personal cell phones during their warehouse shifts. Now imagine, if they were on, they would have got alerts, text alerts. That's how cell phones and smartphones work today. At Amazon, These are sadly not the first deaths during extreme weather. A severe storm in Maryland, we're going back 3 years, 2018, claimed the lives of two contract workers when an Amazon warehouse collapsed. Amazon was also cited as a Dirty Dozen employer by National Kosh in 2018 and again in 2019 due to failure by the company's management to address repeated safety concerns, including fatalities at multiple facilities, a high incidence of suicide attempts, workers urinating in bottles because they were afraid to take breaks, and workers left without income or resources after on-the-job injuries. That peeing in the bottle, we talked about that a couple of times because the bathrooms are so far apart in those Amazon warehouses. And those who drive the Amazon trucks don't have time to go to the bathroom. So they carry a bottle in their truck. I don't know what to say. I don't. Well, I have some good news here. And this involves worker organizing, which has been on the uptick. While a lot of tension over the past couple months has been on workers striking for better wages and benefits, less attention has been paid to workers organizing. We talk about workers at Starbucks in Buffalo, first time, a union. Well, in California, and we touched on this, I have some more details. 17,000 graduate students within the University of California system joined Student Researchers United, SRU, which will be affiliated with the UAW. Now, instead of going through a traditional union election, the students threatened a strike if the university administration didn't recognize their union. Instead of facing a strike right before finals, the administration agreed to formally recognize SRU as the bargaining unit of the researchers. Cindy Estrada is a UAW vice president, and she said, "The UAW is proud to welcome UC student researchers into our union family. They have shown what is possible when workers stand together and refuse to be divided. We look forward to supporting them as they bargain a strong first contract." This organizing drive, 17,000 people, is by far the largest organizing victory in the country this year. While the university said that they supported the union effort, they did fight with SRU to try to exclude fellows and trainees, roughly one-third of the unit. But the Public Employees Relations Board ruled in the union's favor. Also, while not quite as many members, workers at Arctic Slope Telephone Association Cooperative, they are in Prudhoe Bay, Alaska, were deciding on whether to join the Teamsters. Six of them ended up voting to join while one was opposed, and they will join Teamster Local 959 based in Anchorage. And the unit will be made up of all full-time and regular part-time network facility technicians. Let's go to Michigan now. Employees of the Michigan Education Special Services Association have organized and formed the MESSA, M-E-S-S-A, Services Staff Association. Now, while there were 202 eligible voters, only 135 took part in the vote. And guess what? Every one of them voted in favor of joining the union. And the bargaining unit has a whole host of job titles. I'm counting about 40 of them. I'm just going to name a few here. Facilities Services Technician, Data Initiator, Disability Claims Specialist, Healthcare Analyst, Group Services Coordinator. Let's see, Business Analyst, Programmer Analyst. These are all white-collar jobs, all going union. And we have one more here. In Boulder, Colorado, workers at Spruce Confections and the Coffee Clinic filed on October 22nd for a union election. Votes were counted last week. with 31 people voting yes, 9 voting no. The employees will now join the Bakery, Confectionery, Tobacco Workers, and Grain Millers International Union Local 26. The bargaining unit will be made up of 77 people who work as full-time and regular part-time drivers and production and maintenance employees, including baristas, lead baristas, bakers, and quality control employees. So I'll tell you, there's a lot of organizing going on, and the best part, they are getting results. All right, quick break. Jeff Stoffer on behalf of the American Legion coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. Hey, do you want to support American workers? Well, then shop at places where products are made in the USA. Hats off to the Alliance for American Manufacturing. This organization has put together a list of more than 100 companies that make their products right here in the USA. The 2021 Made in America Holiday Gift Guide includes some really great gift ideas for manufacturers in all 50 states, Washington, D.C., even Puerto Rico. And there's something for everyone on your list. You can check it out right now at AmericanManufacturing.org, AmericanManufacturing.org. Let's go to line number one. Welcome one of our regulars, longtime supporter and contributor to America's Workforce, that being Mr. Jeffrey Stoffer, who handles all the media and communications at the American Legion, and that includes the magazine, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. But right now, the big story is what the Legion is doing to help their brothers and sisters in Kentucky and various other states that were whacked by a series of tornadoes on Friday night. Hey, Jeff, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today?
Thanks, Flash. Great to be with you. Yeah, our hearts are heavy for those who've been lost in this terrible tornado outbreak. Just a devastating blow, especially prior to the holidays.
Yeah, I was reading your post on legion.org, and I see two of the six that died at the Amazon warehouse. Now, that one was in Illinois. They were vets. But talk to me about what the Legion is doing. And I'm reading that, what was it, post 26 was completely right. Destroyed as well. Is that right, in Kentucky?
Absolutely demolished. And what's, you know, one of the things about the American Legion that you have to admire is they've lost their post, they lost everything in it, and yet all of their attention is now turned to supporting the community and getting people, you know, sheltered, getting helping with the relief process. You know, they're still searching for people, and they're feeding people, and they're clothing people. People lost everything in the town of Mayfield. And Post 26 there was utterly destroyed. Other posts were also damaged and badly hurt in this tornado outbreak in Kentucky and some of these other communities around there, like Bowling Green and some of the other communities. You know, it hit in Illinois, and it hit in Tennessee and Arkansas, and there were two in Missouri. So this thing was a really a terrible tornado outbreak that may be unprecedented in terms of damage and everything. So what we're doing is this week we're definitely heading there with our the Department of Indiana, the American Legion Department of Indiana, is one of many American Legion groups that is putting together a relief truck and delivering, you know, goods, water, you know, supplies necessary. I think a lot of the needs there are going to be primarily financial to help them rebuild and that sort of thing. And there's an address, a Kentucky American Legion Tornado Relief Fund address on our website at legion.org. It's P.O. Box 2123, Louisville, Kentucky, 40201, where you can send a check if you'd like to donate to it. But these people are absolutely in a terrible way. And we're doing everything we can. And our story just this week, you know, we've been kind of rounding up what American Legion posts across the country are starting to do. We've got posts as far away as Burleville, Rhode Island, who are collecting donations in this massive drive to donate to get to send to the communities that have been so badly harmed in this, and Texas and Alabama and a lot of these surrounding states. Ohio is very involved. They're already, you know, mobilizing funds and getting people supplies and finding out what they can do to support. So, and I know that it can be kind of a tricky situation when you go into a badly damaged disaster site, that they can't really turn all their attention to handling incoming donations. So it's important to understand what it is they need. And primarily, I think what they need is funds.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But we'll be down in Kentucky for the, in Bowling Green and in Mayfield to communicate with them and see all the things that they're doing to turn their attention to relief efforts right now. This is a big part of what the American Legion does, as we've talked about before.
Sure. Let me repeat that address. And this is all posted on the website, legion.org. It's right on the homepage. Checks can be sent to the Kentucky American Legion Tornado Relief Fund, P.O. Box 2123, Louisville, Kentucky, 40201. And anybody who donates can indicate right on the memo line on your check what they want their donation to be directed to or where they want it to be directed to. So please do that. Help out these people because they lost everything. They lost everything. It's just amazing. And again, if you missed that, just go to legion.org and you can get all the information. I'm sure there'll be updates as we proceed. The other story here I want to get into, and this blows my mind, World War II vets. I mean, talk about the greatest generation here. What these people did, I mean, they're 18, 19 years of age, and they're dropped off D-Day. I mean, Pearl Harbor, we just commemorated 80 years of Pearl Harbor. And I guess there's a number of them that are not getting their VA healthcare services. Jeff, I need some explaining on this one. What the heck is going on here?
Well, and there's means testing. You have to qualify to get VA healthcare services in most communities. You know, they have a priority system about who can get in and who cannot. And what this bill does, and we have been championing this bill heavily since the VA means test bill to get immediate unencumbered access to VA healthcare services for the last remaining World War II veterans before they pass away. You know, and it's a bill that is not unprecedented in history. In 1996, when Congress passed the VA Healthcare Eligibility Reform Act, they qualified all living Spanish-American War and Mexican Border War and World War I veterans from having to go through the exercise of qualifying to get into VA care. As long as you were a veteran of those war periods, you were qualified and you could go get VA healthcare services. This is important in those, you know, later years of life, of course. And while it doesn't, you know, you wonder, well, how many is this going to affect? Well, there's about almost a quarter million World War II veterans still living. And we would, I think we would be remiss as a nation if we did not at least give them the opportunity to go use the VA healthcare services that they, you know, fought with their lives to protect, defend, and help create. So, you know, it's a, I think we have been really focused hard, and we've talked about this a little bit on the show in the last couple of years, is we launched a series called Our World War II Story on Legion.org that has been really popular, telling the stories of the American Legion's role in support and innovation and personal glimpses of World War II that have really never been told. And, you know, if you did a search on our website, Our World War II Story, up would pop that portfolio. We've done about 120 pieces, and they keep pouring in today, where we get stories that we just didn't even know. There are stories that are told by members in posts that are part of that, you know, 240,000 plus veteran population who are still members of the American Legion, who are still involved with their veteran community, who are finally telling stories they previously never told. And then we get into a lot of the detail about how the American Legion responded to the outbreak of the war and as the war progressed. So it's really an interesting history that we've been able to put together in honor of the 75th anniversary of the end of the war.
I'm looking at the legislation again. It's a House Resolution 5562. And it's a what they call a means test bill. It would exempt veterans from World War II from the means test needed to receive those VA healthcare services. I'm just surprised that it hasn't really gone that far. I see there's a companion bill in the Senate. The Senate bill has 10 bipartisan co-sponsors, while the House version has 3. But as you indicated, it's just not moving quick enough. So
right.
Hopefully
we would like people to get in touch with their congressional delegations and let it be known that, you know, we believe that the World War II generation deserves this one last salute.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So many are dying each and every day. Come on now. All right. Let's take a quick break here. Jeff Stoffer, American Legion Magazine, legion.org for complete updates. Coming up next, we'll talk about the January edition, and the two stories deal with Afghanistan and also the interpreters that are still there. Pat Gallagher, on behalf of the North Coast Labor Federation and the steelworkers, will be joining us later in the show.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And, of course, we are available on 6 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and the platform known as Stitcher. When you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always like those 5-star ratings. I want to give another salute here to iHeart Podcast Network, which is one of the 6 that we're on. We talked about this yesterday on the show. The Writers Guild of America East just broke the news that a clear majority of workers at the iHeart Podcast Network, which, by the way, is the fastest growing division of iHeart Media, signed union cards to organize with the Writers Guild of America. So congratulations to the iHeart Podcast Network. All right, let's go back to our live line and rejoin Jeff Stoffer. And let's get into the January edition of the magazine. I can't believe we're talking about January already. Jeez, where'd this year go? Lucky to be alive. Let's start there. This is the cover story, Afghan interpreters' long, dangerous journey to safety. And Jeff, I remember we talked about this right before Afghanistan fell to the Taliban. You did an article on this, and everybody was getting nervous. So talk to me about this one.
Well, we were out front of this without question. We've been pushing for the acceleration of special immigrant visas for allies in Afghanistan and Iraq who had supported coalition forces and the American troops in the war on terrorism. We had been on record with that message since 2018. And as 2021 sort of unfolded and, you know, things we were, you know, announcing dates for withdrawal and the situation was looking pretty dire in Afghanistan, we really pushed this message, had press conference on Capitol Hill, did a cover story on the magazine, and I think it was June, about our, quote, desperate allies who are and have been and continue to be pretty desperate. These are people, they estimate, you know, 50,000, 70,000 who assisted American forces in Afghanistan who have had anything but an easy journey to find refuge after the Taliban seized power in August. And what we did is we were able to, Ken Olson, one of our great writers, was able to worked hard to find an interpreter to share his story and what this was all about. And once we saw, we remember the scenes of the planes being overloaded and people storming the tarmac and trying to get out of Afghanistan in August. Well, he was one of those. And we got a hold of him. We were able to get a story told about his experience. And this is a kind of a personal profile in survival and the battle to get these visas and get this ability to come home. His name is Lucky Mannin, and Lucky got his name during his 9-year stint as a helper of American forces, an interpreter. He helped the Afghan border and security police conduct missions. He met with tribal leaders and translated at great risk to his life for 9 years in Afghanistan. And he finally was able to get out in 2013 and out of Afghanistan, but he was able to begin the process of applying for his visas. And he thought it'd take a couple of months. Years go by. Finally, in 2016, he does get himself out, just him out, but his family is left behind. He goes to San Diego. He works on trying to get his wife and children their visas so that they can come. And in the meantime, while he's doing that, two of his good friends are killed because they knew him. And he's in San Diego. It's a big story about how he works to try to get the visa. He's a guy working in San Diego, working at a car dealership, and then as a medical interpreter. Then he took another job at Amazon. And then all this while he was forced to try to remain in hiding so that they wouldn't know where he was. He picked up he did truck driver training, got a commercial driver's license, and he planned to be a commercial truck driver. And then his mother got sick. And in May of 2021, he goes back to Afghanistan. That's when things got really hairy. He had planned to do a quick trip and try to get his mother the health care that she needed outside of Afghanistan where they didn't have it. And in the meantime, he gets caught up in everything and he can't get a visa and his family can't get a visa, partly because of COVID. And he tried to hold things together. All, of course, he lost his jobs in San Diego, and he lost his business opportunity. Lost the apartment. But what ultimately he did was, as the Taliban was closing in August, he calls some of his U.S. veteran friends, and among them was a Navy veteran named Sean Van Diver, who ultimately, with help from the son of late Senator John McCain, were able to get him onto a helicopter that flew the family onto the airfield and got them onto a plane and got them out in August. And as that story, I mean, this was a really difficult, operation to perform at that time. As you know, it was a complete melee. They started a thing called a hashtag campaign called hashtag Afghan Evac, Afghan capital AFGHAN, capital EVAC coalition, about, where a number of different organizations and people have basically pooled their resources to get people together, veterans, service members, diplomats, teachers, ordinary citizens, to help these guys get going. It helped about, they think about 5,000 make their way out, but, thousands remain, and they are in peril as Afghanistan, is in continued trouble and is not heading in the right direction, which is the subject of the companion piece in this article in our January issue. The bottom line is Lucky, got his nickname Lucky because during his time as helping the Americans in Afghanistan, he survived two IED attacks. And someone said, there's no way the guy should be alive because he literally survived those, and they called him Lucky. Ultimately, he gets into the United States, and with help from American veterans, just helping him on his own, they get him into Texas, and they're able to get him set up with a place to live and his family, and he's able to open a small store in Texas. So that's what he's doing now. And I think the meaningful thing is all he worries about is the thousands of others who are worse off, who can't tell their stories because their family and the Taliban will come find them. And they can't even tell veterans because they can't reach out to veterans or else they'll get caught. And his big goal is, as soon as he gets, financially set, he's going to try to do everything he can to help all those who are left behind. But this hashtag Afghan Evac is a place, it's kind of a social media community that has grown to work to support those who assisted us, our allies in the war over there, who are very, very pro-American friends who risked their lives to create a new future. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, our companion piece is what we call, we were loosely calling it Afghanistan or Taliban 2.0. And it's really a feature by Sajan M. Goel, who is an international policy thinker and scholar, who basically says no matter what you're hearing about the new Taliban and the Taliban takeover and what their benevolent future dreams are or visions are, it's really the same old hardline group that we knew from 1996 to 2001 when they had control there then. And the things that are happening there is it just continues with this sort of medieval approach to humanity and rigid Islamic law, public beratement and physical attacks and violence. And and one thing that I think has an economic aspect to this that we might think about is that after the Taliban takeover, the West basically began to employ these economic sanctions against Afghanistan, and a lot of their you know, their smartest people, their skilled workers and their government workers and stuff like that, either went into hiding or escaped, which opens the door to such industries as heroin, poppies, and methamphetamines, which are extracted from a shrub there. And all of this new illegal economic trade equation sort of opens the door as the West departs from Afghanistan, departs from economic support or support in general in Afghanistan. It opens the door to become once again another hive of terrorism. And this is something that we're watching very closely as things unfold in Afghanistan. So the title of the story is Afghanistan, the Grim Future, because I think that it is. And I think that the story of Lucky Manning sort of personalizes, you know, what it is that he was trying to escape and the dangers and the fears that he had and his family and his friends and many who are left back there who were also interpreters or who were also supportive of the coalition. So it's right. It really humanizes what happened there in August before we, you know, sort of like set it aside as a piece of history. There are people there who are still in danger, and he is one of the lucky who were able to escape with assistance from veterans.
It's all contained in the January edition of the American Legion magazine, Veterans Strengthening America, and the cover story, Lucky to Be Alive. Boy, he certainly is. All right, my friend, we're going to button it up there. You take care. Best of the holiday season. I still can't believe this year just flew by. To you, to all your staff, your family, and we'll be talking in January, okay?
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Flash. Appreciate you.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. Pat Gallagher on behalf of the North Coast Labor Federation and the Steelworkers coming up next.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation, all connected to the AFL-CIO. And speaking of which, let's go to line number two right now. On behalf of the North Coast Labor Federation and also the Steelworkers. Man, is busy, busy, busy. That would be Pat Gallagher, District 1 rep for the Steelworkers. Hey, Pat, how are we doing today, brother?
Okay, good afternoon, Flash.
All right, we got a couple things. Let's cover the state of Ohio first, redistricting. Had a pretty good conversation a couple of times with Tim Berge on behalf of this, and this is crazy because Ohio is not that Republican. Maybe 53-54%, but when you take a look at the districts, the way they carved them up, they would have a super majority, like 66, maybe 70%, maybe 80% in some elections. So this is a case that is currently before the Supreme Court of Ohio. I'd like to get your point of view on it. What do you think is going to happen here?
Well, I don't know how the Supreme Court is going to rule, but it's very obvious that these is the typical stereotype for gerrymandering by the Republican majority. I mean, we did lose a seat, so we're going from 16 congressional seats to 15 congressional seats with the 2020 census. But I mean, it's just mind-boggling how they determine these seats. It looks like if you go by what the population in each of the 15 districts are, the Democrat majority or Republican majority, we're going to end up with 13 Republican districts and 2 Democrats. Right now, it's 12 and 4, which we think it, because of gerrymandering, that's why that's there. But it's just amazing what they've done and what their goal to try to get there to maintain their majority and keep their people in office.
Well, one rep who's a true friend of organized labor is Marcy Kaptur, and she's been on the show. I mean, her base is Toledo. They changed her district, so it goes from Toledo to Cleveland to the west side. We're talking well over a 2-hour drive there. So what's the status on that now? Are they trying to dump her altogether or what?
Well, they definitely are. The district that they put her in right now, according to where it is, it would be 48% Democrat, 49% Republican. And what they've done is they've taken, first of all, back after the 2010 sentence for 2012, they moved her way east over into even Cuyahoga County, all of Lorain, most of Lorain, Cuyahoga County, moved her way over east, put her in here. And now in this one, in the 2022 elections, they've moved her back west and farther west, all the way to the Indiana border and all that, to ensure that all those Republican areas would be covered in her district. So it's really, I mean, they just flop it. They'll have no respect for geography, communities, or any things that, you know, go into representation in Congress, and just move them around just for their political gain.
And they did this some years back when Betty Sutton, I believe that was the 16th congressional district, and she, again, a true friend of labor, and they squeaked her out as well. And it's sad that this kind of thing is continuing. Well, we'll see what the Supreme Court says.
You know, and another good example of that also, too, was in the Cincinnati area. Back in 2010, we had a man by the name of Steve Driehaus beat Steve Chabot there.
Yeah.
And the next period, they moved his district, and they made it 64% of it was one district, 22% was another district, and 13% of it was a third district that they all merged into his district and made it a majority Republican. It ended up being 92,000 population was Republican and 32,000 Democrats. So, that's the change that happened when they redistricted him. So this is just an example of what gerrymandering does and how it denies our fair representation and fair elections in our congressional areas and our also legislative areas, too, for
sure.
State House and State Senate.
Right, right. Yeah, instead of voters choosing politicians, it's politicians choosing their voters. They carve it out to their advantage. It's been going on for a long, long time.
And it leads to the overall polarization in our legislative system now, because what happens is everybody plays to their base.
Right.
They don't have
right.
to worry about being compromised or making agreements or thinking about the overall good of the whole country. It's just what's good for my area. What vote do I got to take to keep me in power in my area? And if it's gerrymandered this one way, you just play to that base. So there's no real legislation going on in our country right now, just polarization, and a lot of it has to do with this gerrymandering.
And it further frustrates the voters because nothing's getting done. Yeah.
Yep.
All right, let's
voter apathy and creates a lot of a lot of ill will towards government.
Let's switch to the WTO. I know this is kind of a sore spot because it was 20 years ago this month that the United States entered the World Trade Organization with China. And there was a lot of pushback back then. And I know Nancy Pelosi spoke very loudly about it and said, not a good idea, but apparently they went forward with it. And we saw the results, like almost 4 million jobs disappear. And I saw this on your website. Well, this is we're talking steelworker issues here, usw.org, and I see President Tom Conway speaking out about this because this madness is still continuing today, right?
Right. No, China's still been the worst player in global trade by far. you know, what they've done in the steel industry alone, where they've made their capacity almost 10 times. They have half of the world's capacity right now, and they cannot use nowhere near that much steel demand in their country. It's just all for export. It's all to let the global steel market. And if we kept them out of the WTO, we could have had more sanctions against them and had stronger policies against them. But when they were in the WTO, they had a little bit of umbrella protection, and they violated every rule of the WTO to begin with anyway, so it had no advantage whatsoever to bring them into the WTO. And it's, you know, we've been paying for it, not only in America, but actually globally.
And one good example, and you've talked about this several times, aluminum. How many aluminum smelters do we have in this country as a result of these crazy trade deals?
I think there's 3 active aluminum smelters in the United States right now.
That's it. All right, Pat, there's one more issue here that you wanted to address, and this comes courtesy of the Economic Policy Institute. This organization, which does great research, just came out with a study documenting the correlation between higher levels of unionization and a range of economic, personal, and democratic well-being measures. And I always say there's a union difference. When you have high-density union areas, you have better communities. And obviously, this shows that in this report. So I'd like to get your point of view on this.
This just substantiates what we've known forever, that, you know, unions make communities better, make lives better for not only the members, but the communities that they're in. In union density state, the average wages for comparable jobs are 10.2% higher. And that includes the non-union spillover, because what happens is that these employers who are in non-union shops compete with union shops to get the same quality of employee, you got to match their pay. And there's a lot of times, too, where these employers know that we're around there, we're trying to organize these people, and what they do is they give them increases and wage increases that are commensurate with what we get for our members, just to keep the union out so they can maintain their power and control. In states with union density, the annual median average wage earnings are $6,000 more than states that do not have high union density. Also, too, there's higher wage rates. We reduce the wage gaps. There's less gender gaps because of unions. We also increase the revenues that come into these communities because we pay more taxes. We also decrease the drain on social services because more of our people have health care. They have benefits. They have pensions. They don't need the social safety nets that we have out there. There's also increased civic engagement because we have more at stake. We participate more in our governments. So it's really substantiates what we already knew, that unions are good for communities and are good for America.
And they're good for democracy. I'm reading here over 70% of low union density states pass voter restriction laws. So there you have it. It's right there in the report.
Yeah, you know, the thing, Ohio, we're 15th in union density. We have about 13.7% union density. And the low is South Carolina. They have about 3.2% union density. So
yeah, I know California and New York are high. The highest, yeah, I believe, is Hawaii. Hawaii is over 20%, something like 20%.
No, actually, New York is the highest at 24.7%, then Hawaii, then Alaska.
Okay, they beat them out then. Hey, I like that race. That's a good one. All right, my friend, I'm going to leave it on that positive note. You take care. I'm not going to talk about what's going on with the Cleveland Browns because it's happening all over the NFL. I know you're a big Browns fan, but this COVID-19 thing is just devastating so many players. So
it's going to be very interesting what happens on Saturday. And also, I want to wish a happy holidays and safe, happy holiday season to the listenership. So.
You take care. Thank you. We appreciate that. We'll talk to you next month. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the Alliance for Retired Americans, and I'm keeping my fingers crossed, we may be featuring the president of the American Postal Workers Union. Until then, all of you, have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.